Chapter 12. What Lies Beneath. Fenris froze with a hand on the doorknob. The shouting was indistinct. Then the door to Varric's suite slammed open with such force that dust was shaken from the rafters all along the ill-built corridor. Varric's voice rang out clearly.
Fine! Get out of here! But as your friend, Hawk, and speaking as a guy who gets assassins on his ass every time he gets within 100 miles of the love of his life?
Varric, Hawk snapped, just as clearly.
Speaking as a guy who's finding this hard enough already, please shut the hell up!
Fenris saw Hawk storm out into the corridor and slam the door behind him, setting off another shower of dust. He paused then, shoulders sagging. Perhaps he expected Varric to come after him. It was rare indeed for the two of them to be at odds. Fenris could not look away. Hawk was still fully dressed in his mail and leathers. He had discarded the top layer of plate and fur at some point. His face was flushed with anger and alcohol. There were deep shadows under his eyes. It was rare, Fenris thought, for Hawk to drink to excess. He knew he should take a step back. One step backwards into the shadows of the room where he had been sleeping, before Hawk saw him. A step away, since he could not go towards him. But he could not move. Hawk was looking towards the stairs, down into the taproom. But it was a blind and distant stare. Fenris could not stop noticing things. There was a new pair of scars on Hawk's bicep that had not been there a year ago. His hair and beard were longer than he usually liked them. His hands clenched into fists and relaxed again, and Fenris thought he was trembling. And then he must have felt Fenris's stare. He blinked and his brow creased. He turned. His mouth opened, wordless.
Oh.
Fenris, he said. Fenris gripped the doorknob tightly.
Hawk.
I didn't know you were there.
My house was demolished, Fenris said, by demons.
Right, you know, I don't know what happened to mine, Hawk said. I haven't even been home yet.
Fenris said nothing.
Did you know Viscount Dumar kept a decent wine cellar? Hawk said. No one's touched it in years. Not Meredith's style, apparently.
The corner of his mouth turned up, a pale shadow of his usual smile.
Varric and I went on an adventure.
And got drunk, and came back here and argued, Fenris supplied in his head. Argued in the early hours of the morning, before either of them had slept. And then Hawk had stormed out of Varric's quarters, and now he stood by the stairway looking unhappy. And none of it was any of Fenris's business.
By your leave, he said.
He let go of the doorknob. His hand was cramping. He would have to walk past Hawk to get out of here. It would only take seconds, and then it would be done. In that moment, he had no particular thought of where he would go. Just out of here.
Wait, said Hawk as Fenris walked past him with his eyes cast down, so he did not have to see his expression.
Fenris, wait! The stairs, the tap room, there was the door. Fenris kept walking.
Wait, said Hawk, and that was Hawk's big hand on Fenris's bicep, familiar as dreaming. Fenris jerked away and spun on his heel and shoved, all in one movement, lyrium blazing through him, and Hawk stumbled back. He caught himself on a table, and Fenris stared at him.
Don't do that, said Hawk, stretching out one suppliant hand, not moving from where Fenris had pushed him.
Don't do that.
It took Fenris a moment to realize what he meant. The pain and burn and the numbness all fell away before the feeling of that one instant when he put his hands on Hawk to throw him off. The solid breadth of Hawk's shoulders, a fraction of a second only.
Please, Hawk said,
and Fenris glanced down at his red-lit hands and wrists and grimaced, and let the lyrium go dim. He could no longer summon much self-pity about the whole thing. There was, he thought, with bitter amusement,
too much else to pity himself for in this moment. The blight would have to wait its turn. Hawk was still where Fenris had shoved him, still looking at him. He dropped his hand to his side.
"Does it hurt?" he asked.
"No more than usual," said Fenris. He added honestly, "Less."
"Less?"
Hawk said. "Until it changes," said Fenris. He glanced down as he said it, half expecting to see the creep of red crawling up his arms, but the infection was still halted at his wrists.
"Let me see," Hawk said,
and Fenris did not see what he meant to do, and then Hawk's hands were around his. Fenris could have jerked away, but he did not. Hawk turned his hands over, gently, to see the markings on his palms. Fenris looked down at them, too, rather than looking at Hawk's face. They curled in their familiar shapes. Hawk ran the pad of his thumb along a line of lyrium, and Fenris could feel the warmth of his touch either side of the line, but the deadness in between where the marking was. The thrill of stray magic made it glow briefly crimson. Hawk stopped stroking the mark as soon as he saw that. Neither of them said a word. They stood like that, looking down at Fenris's narrow hands and Hawk's big ones, in the dim, grimy light of the empty taproom, for what felt like a very long time. Hawk's hands had the distinctive calluses of a staff fighter, and they were very warm. When Fenris could bear it no longer, he looked up. Hawk was already looking at him.
"Fenris," he said.
"I dreamed you were dead," Fenris said abruptly. Hawk opened his mouth to answer. Fenris did not let him. "I dreamed it over and over. I didn't know if it was true. It gnawed at me. I had to come after you. I would have known no peace otherwise. Alive or dead, I had to find you. Wherever you were, whatever had become of you, I could not have gone on living otherwise. I could never have forgiven myself." Hawk's grip on his hands was tight. "I am sorry," Fenris said, looking away. And then he tugged his hands free. He had said enough. There was no more to say.
"You don't have to be sorry, Fenris," Hawk said. And then he said, "Hey, don't just..."
A hand on Fenris's bicep again.
"Stop touching me,"
Fenris snapped as he turned back. He lifted his hands to shove, and then he was gripping Hawk's shoulders, and he dragged him in instead. He could not help it. Hawk's body was big, warm, solid, unbearably familiar. He still smelled like home. Fenris took a deep, gulping breath with his head against Hawk's collarbone, and then Hawk's arms came around him, a tight embrace. And Fenris held on to him and felt his chest rise and fall as he breathed. He was waiting for the jest. He could hear it in his head, almost. What Hawk would say.
"So, should I still stop touching you, or..."
And he would laugh, he knew, when Hawk made the joke. He would laugh despite himself, and things would be a little easier, perhaps. But Hawk said nothing. He let Fenris cling to him and breathed slowly and did not speak, for long enough that Fenris was surprised, and then confused. He pulled away, enough to make out Hawk's face, and Hawk's hands fell from Fenris's back to his elbows, slowly, as if reluctant. They stared at each other. Fenris's hands were still on Hawk's shoulders. Nothing felt real. Hawk's gaze dropped to Fenris's mouth, shadow of eyelashes on his flushed cheeks, and it felt less real than the dreams Fenris had had of Hawk's death. Fenris could not have said which of them moved first. Hawk tipped his head down, Fenris leaned up, and then they were kissing. Hawk's mouth was warm and chapped, his beard was rough, his lips were slightly parted. Always, when they had kissed before, Hawk's kisses had been confident, eager. But this felt strange and fragile. Hawk's hands still gripped Fenris's elbows, When Fenris pulled away, his eyes stayed closed. Fenris stared at him, and all at once felt something wild break loose inside him. Hawk's eyes snapped open when Fenris shoved at his shoulders. He stumbled back, with Fenris crowding him until his back was against the wall by the doorway. Fenris kissed him again, kissed him hard, dragged his head down with one hand in his hair, and bit at his full mouth until it fell open with a muffled groan. Hawk seemed to come alive in his arms then. He grabbed at Fenris and pulled him close, kissed him back just as hard, wet, open-mouthed, hungry kisses. Fenris jammed a thigh between his legs, and Hawk groaned again, his head thunking back against the wall. Fenris scraped his teeth across Hawk's newly exposed throat, tasted the sweat there. Then Hawk dragged him back up, hands cupping Fenris's face as he sought his mouth. And then it was Fenris who moaned when he felt Hawk's tongue part his lips. Maybe this was another dream, part of Fenris was thinking. Maybe he was still in the realm of desire, and this was merely her most complicated illusion yet. But Hawk was here, and real, and alive, and kissing him. The doubt began to fall away before the feeling. There was a shiver of power loose in the air of the empty room, Hawk's magic slipping ever so slightly from his control, making Fenris's markings shimmer with reflected power. And there was a sweet fire in him, the twin and opposite of the lyrium burn. One of Hawk's hands was tender on his face, the other strong on the back of his neck. His hips were moving restlessly, shoving his crotch against Fenris's thigh. Fenris caught Hawk's lower lip between his teeth and tugged at it, and Hawk whimpered and thrust against him. Fenris wanted him. Fenris had always wanted him, long before he ever loved him. And it seemed Hawk wanted him too, still, despite it all. No doubt this was a terrible idea. In that moment, Fenris could not bring himself to care. He braced himself with a hand on the wall beside Hawk's head and reached for the placket of Hawk's trousers. Hawk was panting wetly into Fenris's mouth, and it seemed to be mostly the wall keeping him upright. Fenris took a look at his shocked, flushed face, and then had to leave off what he was doing to kiss him properly again. Hawk made a protesting noise. "I have you," Fenris murmured, feeling a smile curve his mouth, reaching down. Hawk took a deep, heaving breath and grabbed his wrist. Fenris stared at him. Hawk's mouth was red from kissing. His eyes were dark, all pupil, save for a dizzyingly horrible instant when they flashed gold. "I can't," Hawk said. Fenris jerked his wrist away from Hawk's grasp. Hawk did not move. There was a space between them now that seemed suddenly unbridgeable. The wild want inside Fenris transmuted all at once into rage. This was surely more than anyone could bear, and Hawk had the gall to stand there looking guilty. He very nearly lashed out. But Hawk was just standing there. He would not have defended himself, and Fenris could not do it. "Then don't," he spat instead, and Hawk flinched as if Fenris had hit him after all. Fenris was still in a black rage when he joined Llewellyn and the others on their way up Sundermount. All of them seemed too preoccupied to notice. Meryl looked stricken every time she looked at Llewellyn, and Solas and Llewellyn did not look at each other at all. Fenris decided he despised them all. He took a mean delight in tearing through the corpses that assaulted them as they made their way up the lower slopes, and growled at Meryl the one time she tried to talk to him. Hawk had no right to do this to him. Hawk had no right to make him feel this way. Fenris had never asked to feel this way. He went toe to toe with a shadow warrior whose blows jarred his entire body every time their blades crossed. And magic blazed in all directions around him as the mages dealt with its entourage of corpses. And it did not make him feel better at all. Solas led them down into the cavern of the Vartarl. Fenris fully expected a battle worthy of his fury, but there was no sign of the creature.
"That's odd," said Meryl. "They don't usually go very far away from the places they're guarding." "There,"
said Llewellyn, and nodded towards what Fenris had first thought was a heaped pile of rock. The familiar old monster was motionless, slumped in on itself. Dead, perhaps. But since Fenris had personally seen it torn to shreds by magic and weapons twice, he doubted it. He suspected the beast was unkillable.
"Is it asleep?" said Meryl. "Do Vartarils sleep?"
"It is in aquiescent state. I do not believe it will interfere with our progress," Solas said.
"Good to know," murmured Llewellyn.
"If we may proceed," Solas said, and turned towards a narrow cut in the rock where a natural archway led to what Fenris knew well was a dead end.
"I don't think there's anything through the goodness," Meryl said.
Solas lowered his staff. Beyond that apparently natural archway, a wall had simply melted away before his spell. A second archway had formed in its place. It matched the first in rough size and shape, but it had clearly been carved by elven hands. The fluted patterns of the carvings spread at the peak of the arch into something that recalled the branches of a tree. A white stone stairway led down.
"What are we likely to meet down there?"
Llewellyn said. She still did not look at Solas.
"Nothing," Solas said. "There will be no rifts here. Nor stray spirits, nor demons. The graves of Sundermount lie elsewhere. This place has been sealed for a long time, and its wards are strong."
"Defenses?"
Llewellyn said.
"The Vartarol is the last of them," said Solas. "From here, our progress should be simple."
Llewellyn's mouth made a pinched shape, but she nodded. Hawk would have made a joke, Fenris thought automatically.
"Don't jinx it."
And the thought of Hawk sent him straight back into the pit of rage from before. Hawk's kisses, careful and then eager.
"I can't."
Hawk's hand grabbing his wrist, the same wrist where Fenris had worn Hawk's colors, before Hawk insisted on taking them back. And he had had no right to do that, Fenris thought suddenly. Fenris had worn that scrap of red cloth for years without ever expecting anything in return. It had been Fenris's choice, that proclamation of loyalty. It had been his and his alone.
"Are you all right?"
said Meryl at his elbow. "Fine," Fenris said.
"Is it a hangover? I had a little bit of a hangover this morning. I know a spell for hangovers. I'm not really sure how it works, but Anders used to swear by..."
"I said I was fine."
"Are you sure?"
said Meryl after a moment. Fenris glared at her. A shimmer of magic passed over them as they went through the archway. They could not see it, but Fenris could feel it. Perhaps that was the ward meant to keep other races out. There was a fearsome rumbling sound behind them as they passed through. Fenris looked back and saw the spindly legs of the gigantic monster moving beyond the double arch. The Vartarol had awakened. It was guarding its post once more. No one would be able to follow them down. Solas led them down the spiraling white stairs into a high cavern lit by a multitude of pale veilfire torches. Hanging spires of rock had formed overhead, and water dripped slowly from their tips down to a shallow pool, which covered most of the cavern's floor and reflected the veilfire as if it were one great mirror. Llewellyn stopped short. Meryl had her hands over her mouth. At the cavern's center stood a tall, white tower, slender and almost brittle-seeming, with fluted carvings that called to mind the shapes of trees. Ragged banners hung from its turrets. They were long since faded. There was no way to know what insignias they had borne.
"It's the tower from the Fade," Meryl whispered.
"Aranen Dal'an," Solas said.
It was not the Fade Tower, but it was clearly its model. The version inhabited by the Desire Demon had been an impossible dream construction of tangled white stone. This tower was made of similar materials and had the same slender lines, but it was a very real building. Fenris tilted his head back. The tower's upper reaches had been damaged by the formation of the stalactites, creeping down from the cavern ceiling.
The rocky spikes looked impossibly old, but the tower was older.
I had no idea this was here,
Meryl said.
None of the Dalish knew about this. This place must have been lost for
Inquisitor, said Solas sharply. Llewellyn's expression was very distant. She shook her head once.
Sacred to Mithal, she murmured. Just my luck.
It should not affect you, Solas said. Fenris could hear the edge of concern in his voice.
Oh, it's not. Just memories, said Llewellyn. Someone else's memories.
She did not explain further. A single low white bridge led across the lake towards the tower door. She set off towards it. The white door was not locked. It creaked on its hinges as it swung open. Fenris felt the rush of magic that accompanied it. He reached for his greatsword.
There is nothing to fear, Solas said.
Fenris ignored him. This place was ancient and strange, and the magic here had deep roots. He felt better with a weapon in hand. The ground floor of the tower was one perfectly circular room. Fenris had expected white walls, as in the Fade, but these had been carefully modeled into panels, and then painted with sweeping, abstract shapes. Each panel was divided from the next by a floor-to-ceiling stripe of bronze, closely inscribed with flowing script.
Fresco! Said Meryl.
She ran to the center of the room and then turned on the spot. All delight.
Oh, it's beautiful! Look how well preserved it is! I've never seen anything like it!
I have,
Llewellyn said.
At Skyhold.
She looked at Solas.
The ancients had skill far beyond my small abilities, said Solas, as you can see.
You can do this?
Said Meryl, wide-eyed.
I learned a little of the art in my explorations of the Fade,
Solas said.
It seemed appropriate to attempt it at Skyhold. Like this tower, it was once a place of our people.
Your people, Fenris said flatly. There was an uncomfortable pause. I assume the amulet we seek is further up the tower, said Fenris into the awkward silence. How do we proceed? There were no stairs, no ladders, no obvious way forward at all.
We wait, Solas said.
He pointed upwards towards a small aperture in the ceiling.
At certain hours of the day, the light of the sun shines directly down into this cavern. It will trigger the magic which opens the way forward.
So we just sit here until then,
said Llewellyn.
What fun!
I don't mind, Meryl said. She was looking longingly at the nearest strip of inscribed bronze.
This place is amazing!
They waited. Solas took a seat against one wall of the circular room and closed his eyes, as calm as if he were meditating in an open field on a summer's day. Perhaps he was asleep. No doubt this was the sort of place that suited a dreamwalker. Llewellyn gave him a sour look and then sat against the opposite wall and wrapped her arms around her knees, head down, eyes distant. Meryl went from inscription to inscription, running her fingers along the lines of bronze writing, pausing only to look at the painted frescoes again and exclaim, "There really did not seem to be anything to fight, not even a stray giant spider." Fenris put his sword away and paced the whole circumference of the room, keeping away from Meryl as best he could, lest she attempt to draw him into her burbling excitement. He tried not to look too closely at the paintings. They seemed to have strange figures hidden in their abstract shapes, and they made him uncomfortable. He made two circuits, and only spotted the doorway on the third. It was well hidden, painted over with curved blue and gold swirls that made him think, for no reason, of an ocean. It was only the hinges on the bronze strip that gave the door away. He pushed. The door did not open. "Here," he said. Llewellyn was closest.
"Better take a look,"
she said, getting to her feet.
"Don't break it, Fenris,"
Meryl said before Fenris could kick it down.
Do you have a better idea? Fenris said.
Magic might do it,
Llewellyn said. She sent a whisper of energy towards the door. With a creak and a groan, it swung wide. The room on the other side was small and dark. Its walls were plain dark stone and covered floor to ceiling with carvings, which seemed to move in the flickering light from two veilfire braziers. They stood on either side of a pair of statues, a male figure standing larger than life, with one hand resting in the scruff at the neck of a mighty wolf. The statues were carved not in stone, but in ivory and gold. They were badly damaged. Someone had taken an axe to the face of the standing figure, and shattered fragments of ivory were scattered across the floor. Nothing remained of the front half of its head, but the metal frame which the fine materials had been laid across. The wolf was in better shape, but its eyes had been gouged out. A low wooden altar had once stood before the pair. Someone had kicked it over. Some ancient elf had been very, very angry. Fenris could feel it. Not as he had felt the anger of the murdered slaves. There were no echoes, no demon voices. But in the silent witness of that ruined shrine, all three of them stood in silence for a little while as they looked at the faceless statue, surrounded by chips of ivory. There was so much anger in Kirkwall, Fenris thought. The rage that had filled him for years, ever since he escaped Daenerys, had always seemed all-consuming, and yet it was so small a part of the miserable, buried fury of this small marcher city. Perhaps that was why he had ended up here. He thought of Hawk for a moment then. There was no bitterness in Hawk's heart, and there could have been, easily, after all that had befallen him. Fenris reached for his own anger at the man and found it shrunk to a weak and thready thing. Somewhere between the foot of the Sundermount and this small, dark room, most of it had burned away into grim, dark sadness. Meryl went down on her knees to pick up the overturned altar. There was writing gouged into it.
"I can't read it," Meryl said, running her fingers across the letters. "I don't know this alphabet."
Llewellyn began.
"It says..."
"Traitor," said Solas behind them.
Fenris had not heard him approach. He stepped into the shrine and looked it over.
"Or perhaps anathema would be a more apt translation. An interesting discovery."
"You didn't know it was here?" Llewellyn said.
"I did not."
"Destroying something like this seems like a moment that would leave its mark on the Fade."
"The Fade is fluid by its nature and essentially unpredictable. Not all moments of deep emotion create echoes of the same strength," Solas said.
He smiled a little.
"I do not actually know everything."
Llewellyn kept looking at him. After a moment, Solas's smile faded.
"Back to waiting, then," Llewellyn said at last. "How long?"
"An hour or two, perhaps," Solas said neutrally.
Llewellyn nodded. The air in the small room crackled with suppressed magic. Fenris's markings prickled to it. Meryl, already examining the carvings on the walls, did not seem to notice. Fenris was thoroughly sick of the company of mages. He went back into the room with the frescoes. After a moment, he sat on the floor against the wall. He looked up towards the aperture of the ceiling. It was better than looking at the pictures. He ignored the others when they came back in. Meryl kept darting back and forth between the circular room and the ruined shrine, comparing bits of carvings to inscriptions on the bronze plates. An hour or two of waiting, then the rest of the tower and the amulet, and back to Kirkwall, and the buried anger that waited there. And Hawk, Fenris supposed. Hawk would certainly want to be involved in sealing the Magister's gate, could hardly stay away given the Fade creature that drove him. Fenris would not be able to avoid him. Afterwards he could. Afterwards he would find his own path, one way or another.
Afterwards, he thought, if he still lived, he would leave. He would leave knowing Hawk was alive. He would not have to see him again. After all this. First Skyhold, then the Buried Gate, then all the travails of the Fade, then Kirkwall, and now Sundermount. Fenris reached for his anger and found it gone to flickering embers. Nothing was left but exhaustion. He would leave. He could do that. He was, after all, a free man.